Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take up an issue that I think is extremely topical because it is gloomy beyond belief here where I broadcast in New York City. We emerged from frigid polar vortex weather into a series of snowstorms. I think there's been 17. Now with warming temperatures, at least the snow has mostly melted away, but another snowstorm is looming for New York, and we're not out of the woods, and it's dark, it's cold, it's wet and damp, and people are looking a little gray around the gills. And so I thought it might be appropriate to talk to an expert about the subject that is on all our minds, the winter blahs. Our guest is Stuart Tomk. We call upon him frequently to educate us about issues related to nutrition, and he is an authority on essential fatty acids, and that's not the entire story, but part of the story of how you can develop resilience against the winter blahs. He's got over 20 years of experience in the field of nutritional medicine. Stuart Tomk, that's spelled T-O-M-C, he's a certified natural health professional, and he has been a consultant to the World Health Organization. He has been working in the capacity of educator and a media spokesperson for the supplement maker Nordic Naturals, one of our great sponsors. He is in demand as a lecturer and on TV and radio discussing the latest science on natural alternatives, in particular looking at fish oil, but we're going to cover more ground than just fish oil in today's broadcast. Welcome again, Stuart. It's nice having you. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful, Doctor. A little beaten up from the winter blahs myself, so this is a timely topic, this interview. Every time of year I have this talk, and it's a nice reminder of things I can do to help myself.
Instantly, where are you broadcasting from? Because I didn't recognize your zip code.
I'm in Chicago, and we've had as bad of a winter here as you've had.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so you've earned your bones, so to speak, because you know what do they call the wind in Chicago? They call it, they got a name for the Chicago wind.
I think I'm so used to it, it made me numb.
Right. It's like that shrieking wind that comes in off the lakes, and then the temperatures were in the minus for days on end. And I guess it got a little warmer, but it certainly, I actually, in a way, I prefer it cold and dry rather than damp and a little warmer, you know, when the snow thaws and gets really ugly and gray. So it's...
I was just down in Mexico for 2 days. I gave a coaching session to a group of chiropractors on the latest omega-3 science.
Oh.
And it was stunning to me coming out of this environment, just being somewhere warm and sunny for a couple of days, how quickly that adjusted my mood.
Oh, okay. So let's all just get on a plane and head, the Caribbean, Mexico, California, Hawaii. That's the answer?
Well, I mean, if you can afford it, it's probably not going to help everybody. But it was a nice reminder to me because it dawned on me a couple of years ago. As I said, every time of year, I do this radio show all about the details of seasonal affective disorder. And I was shocked to find out I suffer from it. And interestingly enough, and you may be aware of this, some people get it in the summer mm-hmm. instead of the winter.
Yeah, actually, I know a couple of patients like that. They have like reverse SAD. They get
yes.
gloomy when it gets a little warmer and they start to see the summer fashions in the windows in the department stores on Fifth Avenue. They get depressed because they know it's going to be pretty soon. It's going to be hot and humid, and they hate it. They prefer it when it's cold. So,
well, if you go to Mayo Clinic's website and they break down both the winter depression and summer depression symptoms. The one thing I was struck with is that when you listen to the winter list, depression, hopelessness, anxiety, loss of energy, social withdrawal, oversleeping, loss of interest, appetite changes, weight gain, that sounds like probably a lot of your patients all year round.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. But it also sounds a little bit like what happens to bears, you know, when they're getting ready to hibernate. They become lethargic, but they also kind of get a little bit into, put the feed bag on as if to store away some fat. And, you know, clearly, you know, we're also mammals who evolved during the ice age. And maybe there's something about, the cold weather threatens and deprivation is there. So you head to the refrigerator because you think starvation may be around the bend.
Well, Chinese medicine addresses that. I work with more naturopathic doctors than I do medical doctors like yourself, and there are few, as you know, that have both interests the way that you do. But I'll tell you, the NDs, especially the well-trained ones, they will be the first to point out it's getting darker earlier and earlier at the end of the year. That's the signal to slow down and go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? We push ourselves as much as possible. We get stressed out. We get overspent, family issues. Like, we're speeding up at exactly the wrong time, and we're not listening to the signals we're being sent.
So it's not very Paleolithic to turn the lights on and push the envelope when the weather's telling us basically it's time to chill, relax, hunker down by the campfire and get more sleep, too. Sleep is more important.
Yes, and I think that sort of the interface between both of those things, I saw something that really gave me a laugh before I got to speak to you today. There was a little sign someone posted that said, Google, people have been able to pretend like they're doctors since 1998.
What an innovation. It's amazing. And actually sometimes when I'm sitting with a patient, I will say, gee, I don't know the answer, but let me refer to the Google textbook of medicine, and I'll quickly dial up an answer for you. It's amazing. But, you know, there's a lot of misinformation there as well.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because that's part of my talk for 2014. The World Economic Forum just put out their 2014 report, and they get together some of the best and brightest minds all over the world. And I was really surprised this year, the big trend for 2014, along with Middle East unrest and lack of trust in governments worldwide, is the rapid spread of misinformation online.
Wow. I really have to pick up on that, because, as you know, the theme of my radio program and podcast and, you know, my efforts to get information out, intelligent medicine, the idea that you really have to discern as a consumer the best information that can help you stay well and get well. And, unfortunately, we're bombarded by information. We're propagandized both by the pharmaceutical industry, but also, you know, to some extent, by natural products manufacturers. Unscrupulous, they want us to buy their products, and they just don't cut it.
I'm the first person that I know in the vitamin industry to salute you for saying that, and I'll say it over. I've said it for years and years and years. We've given ourselves, and everyone knows I work for a big vitamin company. I work for Nordic Naturals. The industry has given itself a black eye.
Yeah.
By making claims that we can't substantiate and getting ahead of the science. And I think that one of the unintended consequences of this access to information is too much misinformation. So hopefully people are being a little bit more discerning about what they take in.
Okay, so given that caveat, let's take a look at the winter blahs, or we can also call it seasonal affective disorder. Before we get into the nutrients that might be helpful or lifestyle changes, light itself is helpful. Can you tell us a little bit about SAD lights and what they can do for us?
Well, seasonal affective disorder, one of the few things that the medical literature, as you're well aware of, really signs off on is light therapy. And one of the things that I've learned about studying light therapy over the last several years is that it's effective in some people and not so effective with others.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those places where the light and some of the nutrients potentially interact. And I'm anti-reductionist in every way,
mm-hmm.
but about half of the patients that have light therapy aren't responding to it, and half of them are. But it looks like that's a very hopeful solution for a lot of people.
Right. I personally, when it starts getting dark, I pull out the light box. And when I wake up early in the morning, I turn it on. I mean, not if I wake up at 3 in the morning, because it makes sense, because there's never light then, unless you're at the North Pole on June 21st. But, I create a little extra window of light exposure for myself early in the morning. And I think that gives me a little bit of a lift. I think it is helpful.
Well, especially since the layperson has a difficult time understanding the whole disruption of the circadian rhythm, and that the serotonin signaling, sunlight, waking you up, melatonin, mellow, go to sleep, and that when that thing really gets disrupted, one of my personal areas of interest is to find the little paradoxes inside of those observations. And Bill Lanz, Dr. Bill Lanz, the mega omega-3 researcher of all time, who's become my personal mentor, has told me, Stuart, you pursue those paradoxes. And one of them is the lack of seasonal mood changes in the Icelandic population in a place where they have a lot more darkness than we do.
Yeah.
And they seem to have some of the lowest rates of SAD.
And that should be the world capital of SAD because it's fog bound and cold. It doesn't even warm up that much in the summer. So how do they seem to overcome it? We ought to model whatever it is they're doing to get a handle on our own SAD.
Now, my only complaint about that line of reasoning, and I've been faulty of this myself for years, is I don't know if we can fully tease out all of the nutrigenetic, nutrigenomic interactions. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I'm hoping that more personalized medicine is going to be the wave of integrating nutrition into medicine. Don't you agree with that?
Right. No, I agree. So if you're, say, an African-American living in Minneapolis and you feel the blahs in February, and Bjorn Bjornsson, who lives in Reykjavik, Iceland, is feeling real good, he's a blonde descendant of the Vikings of Nordic heritage, maybe different strokes for different folks, right, because they're genetically somewhat different.
Absolutely. In fact, Ski Shelton, who's become a good friend of mine, who wrote Inflammation Nation, Dr. Ski Shelton, just presented at our big trade conference. And he showed these genetic allelic conversion rate differences in how people metabolize these fatty acids, my area of study. And the whole room, now I was hip to it because he's shown me this for years.
Yeah.
But the entire room was sitting there saying, wow, you have about a 50-50 shot of being what we call a fast converter versus being a slow converter. So I'm hoping that the oversimplifications, I love the story of Iceland to tack back to that, but I don't know if it's applicable everywhere. Their observation was that in this group, they had some of the lowest levels of anxiety and depression and seasonal affective disorder, eating about 150 to 200 pounds of seafood per person per year.
Wow, that's a lot of seafood. Yeah.
Way more than most. Now, when we talk about it, as much as I love omega-3, you also have to think of, well, if you're eating a lot of fresh fish all the time, you're probably not pairing that with a deep-fried Snickers bar.
Exactly, because it's about ratios also. It's not just about the absolute amount of omega-3 that you get in. Is that what you're driving at?
Well, it's also when you're eating a healthier diet, whatever you define that to be, it's then the absence of the other things you're eating, because it's the tissue ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 in the HUFA of the highly unsaturated fatty acid. That's what we need to focus on with omega-3. So my campaign against misinformation from fish oil companies is you've got to know what your omega-3 status is. You can't guess.
Absolutely. So, and that is accomplished by, this is a lead-in, sort of a lead-in question.
They kind of have to come to you, and I'm not in cahoots. I'm a big fan of yours, but I don't work for you.
Right.
You got to go find a doctor that knows how to check omega-3 levels.
Right, and the fix is not on. This is actually, we hadn't agreed to discuss this beforehand. And
no,
in fact,
I mean, it's the only way you're going to know.
Right, and that we routinely check patients for omega-3 levels. However, I'll tell you, there's some instances where I don't check patients, and the reason being is because if they're really consuming a lot of fish or already taking a lot of fish oil, it almost doesn't pay because you're going to see pretty high levels anyway. It's the patients where I really want to underlie that they have a deficiency that we test, you know, for the sake of economy. It's a fairly expensive test, so we don't do it on every single person who crosses our threshold. But, you know,
Now that you know more about the, and we talked about this last time, these huge rates in the fast conversion.
Yeah.
Because not only are you converting omega-3s more efficiently, you're converting LA into DGLA into arachidonic acid at eight times the rate.
Correct.
So you could still have a very low omega-3 index, eat fish three, four times a week, and take four capsules of fish oil per day.
Ah, okay.
And that's part of my crusade this year going forward, because, if you can allow me to go off topic a minute.
Please.
The meta-analysis that JAMA put together that showed no additional benefit of fish oil on top of standard of care, we had all the experts sitting around scratching their heads saying, well, we weren't supposed to see that. That wasn't what we had predicted.
Right.
Well, above and beyond being well medicated, which there's some truth to that, if the average American's omega-3 index is about a 4 or 24% on the HUFA score, if you take two capsules, three, four capsules of fish oil a day, and you're eating 8% of your energy from omega-6 from seed oils, you're not going to have the protection. So now the four-alarm fire has been rung. We're going to have an emergency session in Stockholm, Sweden.
Oh, wow.
So that we can help figure out how to create well-designed studies to tease out the benefit of omega-3 and account for all these the background noise.
You know, sounds like I should get more into omega-3 research, because you get to some really cool places. You were in Mexico, then they have conferences in Scandinavia, probably all along the Nordic Rim is where they like to congregate.
It's actually a really fun area. And you know what we need more of? We need more clinicians that are open-minded to the biochemistry. Somehow, the epidemiologists have taken total control.
Right.
And we need to get back. And evidence-based medicine means, in my opinion, what the doctor sees with the patient.
That's being denied, which is hilarious. Absolutely. So
you know,
while we're on the topic of the fish oil, so what's the fish oil doing in the brain that can sort of buffer you against the stresses and the gloom of winter? I mean, does it winterize the brain, or what's actually happening there?
Okay, let's dive deep into this,
yeah.
Okay? So I'm going to share some work from Joe Hiblin. Joe Hiblin's over at the National Institutes of Health. He's a captain in the Army. He's an MD psychiatrist. He recently showed me this slide. And you know those times where you take in new information and your mind is blown? And he was showing us that the typical average American has 80% omega-6 and 20% omega-3 in their tissues. Then that high level of omega-6 in the tissues is going to cause a greater flood of this material known as anatomide. And anatomide comes from arachidonic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually blunts not only satiety tolerance, but it's also been implicated in a 50% reduction in dopamine and an increase in neuron death.
Okay.
So when you look at this elevated HP axis, all of this elevated anxiety, this fight or flight that we're in all the time, knowing high levels of omega-6 to begin with, arachidonic acid, are also directly causing tumor necrosis factor alpha to go up and all kinds of pro-inflammatory hormone-like compounds, this new connection between that and depression of dopamine is a very interesting area of how omega-3 is going to be used in psychiatric conditions. That's one mechanism.
Okay.
The other mechanism, and this comes from Resnick over at UIC here, Steve Resnick, who's a PhD, and this is his area. He says to me, look at Stuart, the G-protein coupling receptor is so mal-tuned, to use his language, in a cell membrane that is radically deficient in omega-3s. So if you take more fish oil, more omega-3, you get the receptor sites for the neurotransmission get really organized effectively.
Okay. So just to step back a little bit. I think a lot of people think a cell is like a baggie. You know, there's like water inside, and it's like a plastic bag. The cell wall is like a wall. It's actually like sort of a bouncy toy. You know, like kids have, and bobbing up and down on the bouncy toy are these little receptors. And you can actually make the receptors more available to signaling by what the membrane is made of. And if the membrane is made up of trans fats and omega-6 fats, it stiffens the membrane, so to speak, and the receptors are just not going to be listening to signals, and you just will get poor signaling. Insulin resistance is one of the problems, but maybe also problems in the brain, you know, where you're not signaling from neuron to neuron. I guess that's what you're driving at.
Absolutely. That's where the direction's going. So when Dr. Resnick showed me this, he's come up with this test, and it's probably years away from being used. But, you know, normally when you put people on medication, you've got to find out, do they respond to it? It takes weeks. So he said he has this little Petri dish thing set up where he puts whatever the plasma in there, I'm not sure if it's red blood, however he's doing it, and he challenges the individual to the different types of medication, see what they respond to most effectively. But here's where the connection is with omega-3.
So he's actually doing like sort of a psychiatry research where they're testing out new drugs. They want to actually come up with drugs, but instead of a drug, he's going to use fish oil?
Yes, well, what he found was, and I asked him what his colleagues think of this, if he gets someone on big levels of omega-3 and lower levels of omega-6, and the cell membrane, which is Bruce Lipton calls it a liquid crystal semiconductor with gates and channels, is more optimized. He says, Stuart, we can cut their medication in half.
Wow, that's, yeah, and I see that. I do see that.
I said to him, what do your colleagues think about that? He said, they're standing room only every time he's speaking now because they want to find a way. We all know that seasonal affective disorder is not the net result of Prozac deficiency.
So I have a question for you. You don't have to answer it, but I might be putting you on the spot. But, you know, Nordic Naturals exhibits at trade fairs, you know, presumably, right? You go around to like big medical conventions and things like that. And
yeah.
You might go to a cardiology convention, right? Because you want to,
yes.
Right? So you invest in having a booth there to explain to the cardiologist the health benefits, yada, yada. But are you going to psychiatry conventions, the American Psychiatric Association or whatever it's called, to explain this information to psychiatrists who might be willing to pick up and read an article at your booth?
Not quite the American Psychiatric Conferences yet.
Right, right.
More of like the integrative medical conferences.
So that's what I was driving at. It's more the integrative physicians who are picking up, but it's not yet in mainstream psychiatry.
Although the American Psychiatric Association has a clear, robust recommendation for long-chain omega-3 on their website, finally.
Okay, great. That's great news. That's real progress.
I mean, so we're moving the dial.
That's great. So, okay, so SAD can be, so what do you, for a person who's in the throes of SAD as, you know, March approaches with little prospect of improved weather, the bills are piling up from all the Christmas overage, and, you know, so how much fish oil?
Well, this is where the anti-reductionist in me has a hard time ever being
okay.
A spokesperson.
Right, I hear you.
So I would say, you know, at 3,000 milligrams of EPA and DHA, let's use Bill Lanz's recommendation, is the projected amount to get from 24, or say 4 on the omega-3 index, to 8 with protection. So 3 grams of EPA and DHA per day. Now, the latest paper that has grabbed my curiosity came out of Chris Ramsden's work from the NIH. And he was looking at people with chronic headaches, really, really bad headaches. And the reason that this was such an interesting study was the only other controlled randomized trial that we had on omega-3 and migraines showed no clinical benefits, none.
Right. Okay.
However, in this group, they dramatically reduced the omega-6, increased the omega-3, and here's the clincher, had a 12-week diet going into the study that got all the patients at an even omega-3-6 balance.
Oh, okay.
Difference. Now, this is what they found. A 45% reduction in headache hours per day.
Oh, right.
And a 37% reduction in total acute medications needed.
Wow.
It's the first time ever. Now, it's 75 patients. They're all going to laugh at that, okay? It's the first time ever that we controlled the background diet, got everybody on parity, and then the intervention. It was so interesting. You needed to reduce the omega-6 and increase the omega-3 simultaneously to get those results.
Well, that's really how a study should be done, because so often it's just, you know, do whatever you're doing, and here's a couple of fish oil pills, and oh, if it doesn't work, then they say, well, let's not bother doing any more research because the case is closed. And clearly there's potential there. So moving along to other supplements here, we can talk more about fish oil, but I want to mention some of the other supplements on
tryptophan.
On your list. Yes. Let's talk about that.
You can look this up, anybody yourself, but half the patients that are on light therapy don't seem to respond that well. There's a great paper in front of me called Dopamine and Light, Dissecting Effects on Mood and Motivational States in Women with Seasonal Affective Disorder, and this paper and others are suggesting that tryptophan, which we know is critical for the synthesizing serotonin and improving immune function, that in certain patients, additional tryptophan, not eating turkey, but really good guidance from a nutritional doctor that knows what they're doing, could also be great adjunct help.
Yeah, Stuart, we actually make a custom concoction for our patients, which is high in tryptophan, but it also contains tyrosine, because we know that tyrosine, you mentioned dopamine earlier, that tyrosine is actually the building block for dopamine, and tryptophan is a building block for serotonin. And so we combine the two, but we put a little ginger in it, because when you take high-dose amino acids, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but you can get a little nauseous from it.
I have, yes.
Yeah, and so we put a little ginger in that. We call that tyrosine-tryptophan ginger syrup, and we put a little natural sweetener in it that's, you know, or not artificial, that is not caloric. And in fact, it's stevia. And it really is like drinking liquid courage. You know, when you wake up and it's gray out and you got to face the slush or the potholes and the commute, it helps get you out of the door. It really does.
You know, these are just such so nice to hear that from both sides of the camp as a medical doctor, because again, we're not, and you're not suggesting that that's the answer.
No, it is part of a panoply of things you need to do. We can talk a little later about some behavioral things because that's important too.
Oh, I think that's the biggest component of all, but for the mechanistic side of us wanting answers, B6 also holds a little bit of promise for people that perhaps have a diet that's deficient in B6.
Absolutely. And B6, you know, at higher doses, and particularly something called P5P, it's a little more bioavailable form of B6. It has mood-regulating effects. I find it very helpful for anxiety, for example. So our patients with anxiety could take some P5P.
And I like magnesium, too.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about the role of that.
The dysregulation of the biological clock, we see that connected to magnesium deficiency. It's been known to help maintain, we know, our heart health and muscle strength and calcium absorption. We know for sleep and rest, that's another thing. If you are suffering from seasonal affective disorder, in many cases you also have disrupted circadian rhythm. The magnesium in certain cases may help people get a better night's sleep.
Interesting. And also, you know, stress itself depletes magnesium, and many people feel stressed all the time. Find it beneficial for people with depression, panic disorders, almost universal. Patients are low in magnesium. You mentioned also some herbal extracts.
Yeah, I think St. John's wort has been given a really sort of a bad name. I think there are people out there that really understand it. Dr. Hyla Kass, the St. John's wort doctor, you probably know her work for many years.
Yes, she's a good colleague of mine, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, she's one of the first people to, she knows it way more than I do, that in certain circumstances with the right kind of St. John's wort, with the right guidance, she's had some fantastic success.
Right, which is, it's sort of a natural SSRI. It does tend to enhance levels of tryptophan in the brain, and it's generally safe, although the caveat with that is it's a little tough to use when you're on other medications. I think you have to know your way around with it, because it can interact with actually many commonly prescribed medications, so that's one of the reasons it's gotten a bad rap.
But I think together, these things along with BDNF from exercise, light therapy. Every time I turn on the computer, they're trying to say that vitamins don't work and supplements don't work, and I don't think that that's the case.
No, absolutely. But BDNF, for our listeners who are not so familiar with the acronym, that's important too. What's that?
Brain-derived nootropic factor, so that's kind of why you feel good when you move around like we do.
Indeed. And, you know, I have to say that one of, as oppressive as it is, and in the past three weeks, it's been virtually impossible to run outside in New York. I mean, you'd have to have spikes on your shoes, or you'd have to, you know, it's just too much. You know, it's actually downright dangerous. So, you know, I go inside, I run inside. Swimming has been helpful for me, and, you know, taking spin classes and staying active, it really is a great natural antidepressant in the winter.
Well, I am inspired, Doctor, from hearing that, because in between Chicago, although I did get a chance to get down to the tropics for a few days, my travel this year has kept me in places cold and isolated, and I have actually really, really, really felt the lack of regular physical activity. It doesn't matter how in good shape I am and very little body fat and my clothes fit right, but I'm still missing something when I'm not moving around enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great stress buster, and you clearly derive endorphins from exercise exposure. What about, you know, the other thing that I think is really important during the winter is to make friends with the winter, in my opinion, because I'm a Southern California boy, so when I came east to New York, I had no recreational background for the snow. The snow was just like, oh, my God, this white stuff, it's slippery and it's cold, and I had to learn to get into the outdoors on skis, on snowshoes, ice skates, and so on, and you know, maybe an occasional dip in the Polar Bear Club can get the blood flowing a little bit, too.
Well, I like when you said make friends with it, because, you know, I'm such a big fan of Dr. Bruce Lipton's work. The longer I do this, you know, he always reminds me sort of the role of self-defeating negative feedback loops and negativity and, you know, all the cortisol levels and the stress markers go up versus being in love and actually being happy and forgiving the neurobiochemical mechanisms that are involved with our attitude. That's a huge part of keeping healthy this time of year.
Right. I also think that in America, in particular, maybe the modern world, but America really epitomizes this, we get really upset when we're not happy, excited, or ecstatic. And, you know, when we feel blue or melancholy, we really worry that this is a, you know, some sort of aberrant state, and we really must flee from the melancholy. But actually, I mean, the winter is a time sometimes of slowing down, of reflection, sometimes, you know, a little sadness. You know, unless you go into a profound immobilizing depression, it's okay to go there. You don't have to go to the doctor and say, you know, I'm feeling down, give me Zoloft, because I want to be, you know, have an optimal mood all the time. I think our culture kind of demands that a little bit too much.
Yeah, it certainly does. And traveling abroad as much as I do, I absolutely have made that observation. I mean, we are so hardwired to be on all the time. And if it doesn't feel good, if we don't feel inspired or satisfied, then something's amiss. But there is a lot to be said about slowing down, being more introspective, even catching a cold. Yep. I mean, I remember my first exposure to this, someone said, oh, you're having a healing crisis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we tend to think of illness as sometimes a breakdown or failure, but, you know, it's part of, illness is part of health. I mean, sort of the flip side of, you know, the health picture is occasionally that's going to happen, your body adjusts. Or maybe your body's telling you something that, you know, it's sort of enforced rest when you're pushing the envelope too much. So I don't consider perfect health being invulnerable, you know, to, any sort of pathogen, outside pathogen. So the other thing that I think is important to recognize is that, you know, you want to maintain, social contacts. You want to maybe, you know, get out there, go to church or religious service. You want to make sure that you remain in contact with, friends, because it's a tendency to get a little, you know, cabin fever, isolation. You know, I think we have to sort of, deliberately give ourselves a kick in the butt to get out and make sure that we maintain our social networks and our contacts.
It's true, and I have not read the book yet, so I'm always leery about talking about a book that I've not read from cover to cover, but I believe it's in Outliers.
Uh-huh.
That talks about the group of people in Pennsylvania or someplace where they're not living a healthy lifestyle, but there's so much friendly camaraderie, community, takes a village to raise a child, and that they have extraordinary health as a result of all their social interaction.
So this is also one of the themes that I picked up recently in reading The Blue Zones, which is a book about societies where people have extraordinary longevity. And a consistent theme is social networking and maintaining social contacts and avoiding loneliness, isolation. And also just the way also that older people are handled in many cultures. In this culture, you know, sort of a throwaway culture, you know, you're past a certain age and you're expendable. Often you're warehoused in, you know, nursing homes, so on. Older people are integral parts of the society in many parts of the world, and it's just ingrained in the culture. They're respected. They're included in raising grandchildren, even great-grandchildren. And they're also looked to as a source of wisdom and inspiration. So, well, we need a little more of that in this culture.
Well, it's nice to cover this subject sort of full circle, because it's a challenge, I think, working in the vitamin industry, that there's this big push to try to show people natural alternatives to the drugs. And I think the reductionist thinking on either side of the equation is wrong.
It's right. You know, it's the pill approach. It's like, okay, I want to take the pharmacy pills, but give me a bunch of other pills. And the notion is we can sort of distill all that goodness inside a capsule. And to some extent, there are therapeutic effects, as we know. That's our, both of our mottos, you know, as we work in this field. But we have to recognize that it's just a holistic approach.
And hopefully we're on the dawn of that more personalized medicine. I was just at a conference, and Dr. Duffy Mackay, who won't mind me mentioning his name, who's at the Council for Responsible Nutrition.
Yes, indeed.
He's, you know, he is. He's a referee if you will, between FDA and industry.
Yep.
He said to me at a party we were at, right after the conference, he had a bottle of resveratrol in his hand. He said, you know what, Stu? One day we're going to find out this is really good for some people.
That's a nice way of putting it. It's a sort of a qualified statement. In other words, that, you know, it's not a universal panacea. And, you know, I think that's what you're driving at.
It is. And so I think the combination of these things, hopefully our tips for beating the winter blahs, sets the stage for more serious conversation about mental health. I just spent some time with Professor Michael Crawford, who won Brain of the Year Award.
Wow.
And Michael Crawford is a very fascinating man. He wrote in the 70s that at the rate we were going with our diet, and especially the lack of DHA, he said this in the 70s, mm-hmm. That we were in for real trouble. He wrote a book, something about the food manipulators versus us. And it was reviewed by Graham Rose in the Sunday Times, and it said, if what Professor Crawford says is right, we're on the verge of birthing a race of morons.
Yeah.
Now, not attention-grabbing language, but he just constantly reminds me, listen, Stuart, mental ill health is the fastest-growing health care burden anywhere in the world, and we have to address it.
Indeed, we do. And so coming back to another one of the fundamentals here, we gave it a little bit of a short shrift. We say, yeah, good diet. But when it comes to SAD, clearly there is a tendency for people to gain weight during these periods and crave sweets. So what's going on there, and you know, how do you overcome that, and you know, what's the strategy to cope with that tendency?
Well, I mentioned it very, very quickly, but I want to go back and relook at this. Let's go back to Joe Hiblin's work, Captain Hiblin's work.
Yeah.
This idea that arachidonic acid, which we need, but mm-hmm. we have more of than EPA and DHA in the average American, is converted into a compound that directly works on these receptor sites that give people the munchies.
Okay.
So it is possible that high levels of omega-6 cause this hyperactive food-seeking behavior.
Hmm.
If you get into a place where you're kind of getting a little bit of seasonal affective disorder and your brain and body knows that a high-sugar, high-carbohydrate hit is going to hit some of these same receptor sites, there's an interesting conversation going on that if you could decrease the omega-6 and increase the omega-3, mm-hmm. you could create the counterbalance that's called synaptamide, and that has effects on your metabolic system.
So, but it does require the realization that all that stuff that you're taking in is bad for you, and while your body may crave it, your brain may crave it, you really have to take corrective steps. And inevitably, I find that many patients, it's tough at first, but they wean themselves off that kind of rocket fuel type diet to a more sensible fuel. And, of course, that also turns around the insulin metabolism. We know that fish oil has a big impact on insulin metabolism. You know, we can invoke that mechanism that you talked about earlier, the I can't even pronounce that word. What's it, endopamide?
The endocannabinoid?
Right, okay. But the insulin pathway, too, gets revved up when you have a lot of carbs. And actually, there are some good studies, that I think you can probably cite them, which show that insulin resistance improves when you take fish oil or increase your ratio.
I completely agree, and that's where I think this conversation gets to be so interesting, because it's suggesting that we have far more influence based on our dietary choices in terms of our cellular and metabolic health. If you could change for a while the consumption of your foods, maybe think of it like this. Don't change what you're doing, although we want you to, but eat a lot more omega-3 and a lot less omega-6. Mm-hmm. And just eat the foodstuffs the same.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the lack of satiety, this is where this new science is looking at, the lack of satiety is directly related to a dominance of omega-6 in the tissues, meaning you could switch over to a balance, not have that, I got to have the third brownie to give the sense of fullness to the brain.
Indeed. All right, we're almost out of time, but I have to front on this issue. We've heard a lot lately about krill oil as a new improved version of fish oil. And, you know, the claims are that it's more bioavailable. There's something about phospholipids in there. I've actually touched upon that subject recently in an interview with Thomas Williams of the Point Institute, and he's done a position paper on that. And he concluded that there's not much there, that the evidence for the benefits of krill oil is weak, although the claims are really, you know, sky high, that it just knocks ordinary fish oil out of the park. What's your take on that?
Well, they just presented at our trade organization. The krill manufacturers are part of the global organization that we're part of with Nordic Naturals. So here's what I learned. They're the ninth largest advertiser in America.
Okay.
So even though the Council for Responsible Nutrition...
You say the ninth largest advertiser in the nutrition field or overall?
Advertiser in the United States.
Well, you were talking like Ford, Chevrolet.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So he's standing up. He's a slick business guy, but
right.
I'm interested in wellness.
Right.
And here's my concern. Every time they run a commercial that says one tiny pill,
yeah.
You're a physician. I mean, if they take their omega-3 blood test and they've got 8 on the omega-3 index and they're taking one pill a day, well, that's great. That's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
See, the marketing is so far ahead of the science. This is where I would love the FDA to be in control.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, they're just incapable of the sophistication.
I know.
You almost wish that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like when you're involved in a playground fight, you know, sometimes you want to call the teacher, but, you know, sometimes you just have to duke it out. And we duke it out not with our fists, we duke it out with facts. And I think the facts...
Yeah, there's no evidentiary support. Here's what they say. They tell me, well, they believe there's something there with the choline. And
right.
I said this to them. Great, then go out and prove it.
Okay.
Spend all that money... doing really good clinical research, demonstrate that it is more effective. See, if people are taking 1-2 capsules of krill a day, and their omega-3 percentage is like 20% omega-3 in their tissues, it's moving them from 20 to like 23%. That's nothing.
Right.
There is no cardio protection. There's no benefit at all. It's a complete weight. Now, if you take 17 capsules a day,
maybe.
Well, then have at it.
Maybe, right.
It's but just, it's $8.
Right. So, So the comparability, what you're saying, you know, to boil down for our listeners, is that you get a lot less fish oil from a krill oil capsule than you will from a high quality fish oil capsule, because they're poor quality fish oil capsules. Nordic Natural, fortunately, doesn't make those. You make high quality molecularly distilled fish oil in various sizes, different ratios of EPA to DHA, children's formulas, flavored formulas, liquid, capsule, whatever. You know, that's emulsified. There's a whole assortment of them on your website. By the way, the website is what?
Oh, NordicNaturals.com.
Okay, great. But another, just before we go, another claim of the krill folks is that there's this extra added ingredient that you get from krill, which is super beneficial, and that's the astaxanthin. And what does the research say about that?
Okay, I look at Harvard's recent list of preventable causes of death, and along with quitting smoking, omega-3 deficiency, and high intake of trans fatty acids, low fruits and vegetables, I mean, this is just the data. Like, the astaxanthin deficiency is not anywhere, doesn't even exist.
Okay.
So again, this is one of those, and you know as well as anybody, the antioxidant studies, they have failed, and they have failed miserably.
On the astaxanthin?
In general.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't point to the major the studies.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So right. Well, the beta carotene studies and so on and so on. Yeah.
I mean, the reality is we're learning that it's so much more complex. In fact, a little bit of lipid peroxidation with something like a highly unsaturated fatty acid upregulates glutathione synthase. You need a hormetic challenge to the system so that you can upregulate all the antioxidants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so the idea of just throwing a bunch of ORAC high noni juice at somebody, that's not going to cure anything.
Right. Okay, one of these days, Stuart, I'm going to get you to share with us what you really think about krill oil, okay? Because I can tell you're pulling your punches there. And I want you to really lay your cards on the table next time we talk. All right.
I want to come to New York, and we'll do it live face-to-face.
All right, good. We'll do it like a fish oil slam down, you know.
Okay.
All right.
I would love that.
Okay, good. So I think you've inspired our listeners to, access some of these natural approaches to overcoming, the winter blahs. And, you know, if all else fails, spring is on its way. Inexorably, it will, I mean, in a very slow and disappointing and frustrating way, gradually, folks, hang in there. It's going to get better.
It will. Abandon all hope that the past will get better.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks very much for joining us. Stuart, the website, you have a, besides the Nordic Naturals website, do you have a personal website that talks about
No, I do not. But at NordicNaturals.com, underneath our expert list, you can see a tab there for me.
Great. Thanks very much for joining us. And we look forward to speaking to you again when we come up with a topic related to your area of expertise.
Thank you, Doctor.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or, alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening, and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.